Well, conference, John, not that I'm bitter, but you got more cheers. So we'll see how it goes. Anyway, well, thank you for the opportunity to come and share some thinking with you today about what we're trying to do, as the title suggests, to evolve the PSNI. Many times when I come to big or small events, people often ask me the question, well, what's it like then? And genuinely, I can say, with absolute pride, this is the best job I've ever had. I've been privileged to work in four other police organisations during my career, but every day I get up, I do genuinely pinch myself that I've got the opportunity to help lead and shape this fabulous organisation. So what I'm going to do this afternoon, I've taken the theme from, we haven't quite got a 2020 vision, but we obviously, coming new into post, the chance to take a fresh look at things with fresh eyes. We've set out a plan with the policing board about where I'd like to see this organisation go over the next few years. So I just want to share with you how that came about, talk about some of the key constructs of change, and maybe towards the end, just touch very quickly on the impact of something I know is on the minds of you in conference about the potential impact of Brexit. So for me, my story starts probably almost a year ago as the job came to light. And like many of you, when you've gone for any job, big or small, you start to apply your thoughts to what the job is, what the expectations are going to be of the people sort of interviewing you, and then the steps you need to take when you come into post. And one of the things I want to try and describe is the why for the changes that I think we need to make came out of a bit of a curious what. Because on the night before the interview, I was put up in a hotel in the city centre of Belfast, and I woke up at 2:30 in the morning with an image in my mind. And before you get sort of daunted and terrified, I hadn't been drinking, but I can remember it's 2:30 because maybe, like you do in a hotel, I just glanced at the little red clock thing by your bed. And I'd woken up, believe it or not, with the image of a seesaw in my head, because I've been wrestling over the last few days before the interview about how do you translate the information from the board, the things I'd seen and heard myself as I'd travelled round and met people in and around policing in Northern Ireland. And I saw a seesaw out of balance. And if you imagine that seesaw out of kilter, on the thing that was weighing it down were a number of big issues. One was legacy. One was the fight against serious crime and terrorism. And then there was also the day-to-day sort of drumbeat, if you like, of policing big parades, demonstrations, and how that actually seemed to define all the conversations and also occupy the time of people that I'd touched in the PSNI. And it seemed to me that whilst each and every one of those in their own right were valid concerns, it seemed to be getting in the way of what people wanted to see. You know, you're all part of Northern Ireland, you take a policing service from me and my colleagues, but I heard and saw little reference to answering the phone, to being visible in communities, to turning up to crimes, collisions and everything. It just wasn't in the sort of rubric of the organisation. And I saw it was my job to try and pitch to be the chief constable and then use that power and influence to balance the seesaw and reshape that conversation and that dynamic. And as John knows from his board days, that was the essence of the pitch to get the job. So top tip, if any of you have won a new role, talk about the seesaw or the swings. So, but that, I came into post and I saw the fulcrum of the seesaw being about leadership and about changing attitudes and culture in the PSNI. And when I say that, I'm not in a sort of mode of saying it because I think there's anything wrong with this organisation. I've been out on patrol this morning with colleagues in roads policing. I paid particular attention to Antrim for some strange reason. But generally, I had plenty of time with officers today who police our motorway networks. And I could not be more impressed with their commitment, their energy and enthusiasm. And it's something I see day in, day out when I go across the country visiting officers and police staff doing the job on your behalf. So this is not about trying to reform something that's broken, but actually a pitch to take us perhaps to a different style of policing over the next 10 years. And the pitch for change is around these three key pillars. Some of it you'll have heard before in terms of what's been reported in the media, and some of it I just thought I'd spend a few moments to talk about. So the first thing I sort of latched onto when I came here was a clamour and a recognition for neighbourhood policing. If you went into the policing board's own consultation document, it was writ clear that people wanted to see more of us in your communities. It needed to be a service that was more visible, it was more accessible, it had to be more responsive, but absolutely community-focused. So they were the early ideas that I brought into the job. And then where do you go with what that might manifest? It seemed to me early on, and we were talking in the margins, as you do in an event like this, as you're catching up with people I've met before or making new introductions. And the other question that often pops up is, what's it like now there's a government? Well, the corollary is, what was it like when there wasn't one? Because coming into post, I was probably enabled me to say things in the public space, for good or ill, as John has referenced, as you learn about some of the sensitivities, but say things in the public space that probably I couldn't actually do now. And when you go into Patton, which I still think is a seminal piece of reference in policing, I first looked at Patton 20 years ago when I worked in Merseyside Police. And even if you see it from the lens from the northwest of England, I thought policing in Great Britain was missing a trick by not embracing more of what Patton was teaching us here, and I still do. But obviously a student of Patton will tell you that in the middle of his report was this notion of 7,500 police officers being needed to police Northern Ireland in times of relative peace and comfort. Now, I know the world's moved on since then, and I know the type of crime and incidents we deal with has often changed, but it seemed to me something to land a message on. And the particular reason that I chose it was because back in England and Wales, the new Prime Minister was writing cheques for all sorts of things, including 20,000 police officers for England and Wales. And I found it frustrating that given the different dynamics of the devolved politics here, that bounce wasn't coming here. I was actually accused quite early on by civil servants of plucking a figure out of the air. And frankly, I said, well, if it's good enough for the Prime Minister, I'll take the same hit. And so off we went. But in truth, actually, as we've begun some more scientific work to look at the types of crime and incidents that you tell us are important, the type of work we know we need to do, and how we need to reorganise ourselves, it actually spookily comes quite close to that figure. So the first pitch of change, which has the support of the policing board, is to grow the PSNI to this size of workforce. And if we do it, it's about promising to commit the bulk of those extra officers into neighbourhood policing roles. You may have seen in the media over the last few months an early promise to put 400 new police officers back into neighbourhood policing, and we've nearly finished that work. And I often go round towns, cities, villages across the country, and so far, everywhere I've been where we put new officers, I've heard good stories and seen positive feedback about people being noticed back in the communities, because I think it's a means of building trust, building relationships, and I think actually, whether you're worrying about the little things, street drinking in a park, or right up to fighting serious crime and terrorism, well, you all live in towns, villages, cities, you know the people that cause harm around you. So by having a police officer there, at least in every ward across the country, you can have a conversation and people tell you who's doing what, and we can push back the fight against crime and terrorism. Now, clearly sitting underneath that, there's other things we need to do to grow the organisation and make it work. But I won't have time to go into that detail today. If we're going to get more people, we need to put them somewhere. So I'm also pitching for a more modernised police estate. At the moment, given the vagaries of how civil life works here, as well as a chief constable, I'm called an accounting officer. So I have to lead the policing service, but also balance the books. So I'm the proud landlord of 185 porter cabins. 185 porter cabins. And I've got one building in my sort of property portfolio, as it were, that is 200 years old, and it's sinking into the sand in Enniskillen. So it probably feels to me more like a hotel. But to be truthful, I was in one of those porter cabins this morning at Steeple with colleagues from Rose Policing. And again, trying to just give a bit of a flavour to what some of the officers just almost accept as part of their day-to-day life. I'm in a two-storey, 50-year-old tin box with a leaky roof that's been condemned, and we're still working out of it. So that's what we're asking our police officers and staff to do right across Northern Ireland in some of the working environment that we deploy them from every day to protect your communities. Now, I know in terms of a public agency, I'm not the only person pitching for more cash, and you, all of you sitting here today, will have your own thoughts, anxieties and worries about who gets precious money. But it doesn't feel right to me, and it certainly didn't fit the sort of mindset and the expectation I had of coming here, that in a service that I've said more than once has unique challenges, that that's the sort of working environment that my officers and staff have to put up with. So I have been working closely with the new government to see how we modernise the police estate, starting firstly in Belfast, where we can come out of some of the more iconic, if you like, headquarters locations, with a vision of two things: building a campus-type style of head office headquarters somewhere on the edges of Belfast, so you can bring all your specialist capabilities into one place, improve the working environment to probably look and feel more like the experience that many of you will have, as well as realising precious real estate money, frankly, to offset some of the costs. The second thing we want to do is look at a new police college. Some of you will have been in and around Garnival, which is our sort of font of learning and knowledge, but it's actually a 1960s catering college. The people that work there do a great job, and John and I and other colleagues for the board regularly trip in and out to attest new officers into their careers. It's one of my favourite places in the PSNI, to be truthful, because there's such a buzz about the place and such optimism. But again, it doesn't feel right to me that we're trying to instill values and attitudes in the future in a building that's definitely got one foot in the past. And the third thing we want to do in a state, because our precious, our conscious of precious resource, and we can't do everything at once, is to look at the look and feel of many police stations in your community. The steel gates, the high walls, the watchtowers, the cameras. Now, whilst recognising that we still operate in a tense security environment where a small number of people want to do us serious harm, I do wonder what the experience is like when you go into one of our police stations, either for information, you might have been a victim of crime, you might have come to make a statement about something. They look and they feel austere. Steel doors, steel seats, armoured glass. It doesn't feel very welcoming. So the third pitch is to try and demilitarise or desecuritise the environment that you see when you come into contact with PSNI to make it more inclusive, friendly and welcome. And then the third side of the deal, if we polish off, and I think it's probably the one that brings actually the most opportunity, is what we're calling digital PSNI. You may find it surprising, frankly, that the computing power in most of your coat pockets or handbags exceeds that of my patrolling officers. So whilst we have a good infrastructure for the reasons of security, actually working with a computer in the PSNI at the moment, it's no one's fault, because I've been really impressed by what I see, by the optimism and the commitment of our staff that work in the IT world. But everything's slow. For those of you that have the log-on experience at work, we're good at egg timers that spin round. We're good at multiple layers of logging in. And even out today with the roads policing colleagues, they have a handheld device these days that help capture information, but only so much. So I've been talking to the board about significant investment in handheld technology for officers and staff to promote a far more agile way of working. And we've actually made rapid progress in that space. We're about to roll out 1,700 devices with the support of the board to frontline colleagues, that's both police officers and staff. So for a patrolling officer, as this starts to take pace, rather than a world which I watched the other week, where I went out on a raid to somebody's home in Belfast. It was a really serious crime. We went to arrest somebody who had been downloading images of child porn. We went out with quite a 21st century computer where we can plonk our laptop onto this guy's computer and basically suck out the awful images really quickly. It takes about 10 minutes for thousands of images. So we're not having to wait in a big queue to get a computer hard drive examined. It was really impressive stuff. And yet, I kid you not, alongside this computer is one of the officers from the search team with a 19th century log, almost a quill and a bit of ink, writing down what we see. And it seemed to be almost perverse that there we have optimum technology to recover the evidence and 19th century technology to bring it into the police station. So I want to join the two up. So you'll see in future, and in many cases in the next few months, officers able to come into your home and do anything in your home that they could do back on the computer back at the police station. They could recover evidence digitally. They can take a statement of you in your home. They can ping that statement into the custody centre probably faster than we could get the prisoner from your house. If they've broken into it, we've caught them, or there's been a domestic incident or a whole range of stuff. We can give you a crime number there and then, because we can put the crime report into the system. Or indeed, if as we've been doing today out with roads policing colleagues, if we're doing a traffic collision, we can give that information now and then. So a huge step forward. I think it gives you a better service as a citizen, but it frees up the time of the precious time of my officers and staff to do that work that you want to see them do and to keep them accessible and visible in communities. I also think it'll be a game changer for police staff. You have to often remember that of the nearly 7,000 police officers, there's 2,500 police staff that keep them moving. They answer the phones, they keep the cars on the road, they keep our buildings moving and going and all that sort of thing. And sometimes I wonder, do they feel a bit like a second-rate citizen? So giving them the same sort of technology in many places can help them work more agilely, optimise the use of the new estate, because frankly, if you can use it differently, you need less of it, and actually give them more meaningful and worthwhile work in terms of recognising the valuable contribution that police staff make, but use them far more flexibly and agilely than perhaps we do at the future. So they're the three things that, if taken together, I'm confident will manifest in the police service that is more visible and is more accessible, because if we're digitised, it doesn't mean you have to just phone us up anymore on the 101 service. You can have a web chat, you can ping us an email in, you can use all that digital experience that you use in the shopping world into the contact, the police service world. And I think we need to then knit that sort of ambition and that energy together by an investment in leadership development to actually provide the guidance, the pace and the momentum for the next generation of policing this country over the next 10 years. Now, clearly, as I draw matters to a close, there was one thing fizzing away in the background, and I won't be talking today about the virus because I've made recent comments about some of our plans and preparations. But the thing I was asked to mention was the effect of Brexit on policing Northern Ireland. If I'd stood here perhaps a few months ago, we were in a state of concern about a north-south problem with tensions around the border, and then an east-west problem with the line down the Irish Sea, and how that might play out in terms of feelings, emotions and threats to safety in two key communities. Now, clearly at the moment, in the absence of detail, you live in communities just like I do, that tension seems to have calmed down. But clearly there are tools and tactics that I still need to help to keep you safe. So there's a lot of talk about the withdrawal of our powers to arrest people across Europe, the European arrest warrant. And am I concerned? Well, clearly, yes, of course I am. Because policing is done by people, but people actually need legislation and tactics to make it work. So by losing something in this hand, I need to work with the government to make sure we get something back that's just as good in the other. And that's what's going on at the moment. In a worst-case scenario, just to reassure you in terms of if the deal doesn't work, we can actually rely on legislation that's nearly as old as some of our buildings, it goes back to 1957, to actually still extradite and arrest people from other jurisdictions. So it's not that all things are over, but actually in a modern world, you'd prefer for parity and whatever replaces what we've lost is as good or better. And the second thing, if you're in a conference like this, to probably keep a mind to, is the arrest warrant is just but one piece of the jigsaw. Because even this week, we've seen arrests in relation to one of the underreported and probably unseen crimes of people trafficking, which put this place well on the map a few months ago with that tragedy that had links to Europe, to Essex and Northern Ireland. And we continue to make arrests around people trafficking, particularly with the National Crime Agency. But if we're to attack crime like that, or actually to get better at interdicting in the movement of other forms of contraband, whether it's firearms, drugs, people, etc., etc., that the bit that's often missing in that conversation is preserving the information and data sharing protocols we enjoy with Europe at the moment, because I think that's as crucial, if not more important. Because actually, you know, policing is often said is about people, but people in the modern world need data and information to make smart decisions. So in those deliberations in the future, I think that's as important as one piece of legislation to help me keep you safe. So, a quick canter, I suppose, through a vision for the next 10 years. I don't pretend it's going to be easy. I think we need to shape expectations so that even if someone wrote me a cheque at the end of March, I couldn't grow the PS&I to that number overnight. There are pressures in the logistics of training people that would probably mean at whatever time frame the amount of officers promised in the new decade document are made clear to me, we have to recruit at the pace of putting people through the training college at Garnival because of some of the unique things that we have to do here. So the fact that every officer is armed takes up time to train those new recruits at the same time as we're keeping the officers that already work with us up to speed on what is actually the use of lethal force, so a key and unique part of keeping you safe. So I remain optimistic that the promise will manifest. Whether it's this year or not, we'll have to wait and see. But in closing, a reminder that my commitment to you is to make sure that we deliver a police service that is more visible, it is more accessible, and it is more responsive. And in that space, it includes how we answer the phone and how quickly we turn up to crimes and incidents, because I think that's one bit of policing we can improve. By the time I finish here, people have made their judgments about whether this guy was a successful chief or not. But I have three issues you can hold a mirror up to me, which John knows about, and other members of the board. So I think policing going forward in Northern Ireland should be defined by three key promises. The first, that we care. We care about the communities we police. We care about the views of the partners that we work with. And also, we care about the aspirations and the needs of our workforce. Then I need to be able to show that we listen. So that we listen to you, we listen to our partners, and we listen to our workforce, because you've all got ideas about how we can make things better. But crucially, policing is about doing things. So I also promise that we should be defined by a police service that acts, that enforces the law, that uses tactics audaciously to protect you, so that shows we protect communities, we act on behalf of the partners we work with, and also that I take action to improve the career opportunities and the working experience of the brilliant officers and staff that I lead. So that's what my thumbnail sketch of the next 10 years looks like. In a few years, you'll tell me where I've got there. But thank you very much for listening, and success with your conference.